Today, we bring you our fourth installment of Set in Boston, which is that series where we watch and talk about films that are set in or are about Boston. We did the latest, The Departed, on a 35mm film at Brookline's Coolidge Corner Theater with a couple hundred of our closest friends. 2006 is The Departed. It's a gritty, sort of obscene version of a Hong Kong film called Infernal Affairs. In the story, two police officers are undercover. One's working for Boston's Irish mob, one is working for the Massachusetts State Police, and both are trying to figure out who the other one is while keeping their bosses happy and alive. Now, the film won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture, and the only Best Directing Oscar for Martin Scorsese, who's been nominated for that award more than any other living director. Dominga Martin, Ty Burr, and Casey Sherman watched the film with us and then joined us in front of a live audience at the Coolidge after the film. Dominga's an award-winning local filmmaker whose work has aired on BET, VH1, MTV Music, Grammy.com, and her first short film premiered at the Roxbury Film Festival. Now, Ty Burr is a film critic and the creator of the Substack e-newsletter Ty Burr's Watchlist. He helped us launch Set in Boston here on the show. And Casey Sherman, local screenwriter and best-selling author of The Finest Hours, Boston Strong, and a book he co-authored with Dave Wedge, Hunting Whitey, the inside story of the capture and killing of America's most wanted crime boss. As we talked, I started by asking Ty Burr if this film, The Departed, still holds up 17 years later.
Yes, I think it looks pretty much exactly the way it looked in 2006. I don't even think Martin Scorsese thinks it's his best film. I think he's very happy it's the one that won him an Oscar. It's a very good film. It's a very good genre film.
I think he'd have been
film.
Happy with any of them winning him an Oscar.
my point is it doesn't feel like as personal as some of his other films. And in fact, it was a difficult film for him to make, especially apparently in post-production. He really struggled with it. That said, to me, this is the peak of the Boston noir genre of the early part of the new century. You know, following Mystic River, following Gone Baby Gone, all of that movies. This, I think, is kind of the high watermark of the genre before it starts turning into parody, before it starts becoming, Boston movie, you know, like we saw it on late night TV. I think everything pretty much works here, and yet it's also right at the edge of becoming a little cliche, and as I was sitting in the audience and hearing people laugh appreciably, but also at some of the over-the-top nature of some of the movie, I think that's what's kind of changed with time. We kind of see where it gets a little almost too operatic in places, or too sort of comic book violent.
Pick it up from there, Dominga.
Well, I have to be honest, this is not my favorite Martin Scorsese film or Boston film, but what I anticipated when this came out was Mark Wahlberg and Matt Damon being in a film together mm-hmm. for the first time. I think looking back at it now, I did enjoy it, but the derogatory language alone is a crime in this film now, right? Great acting. Some of my favorite actors are in this movie. And your question is, does it stand the test of time? It did feel operatic in moments. I didn't even think it was a funny film, but because of the cliche and because it's not, it has some nuances that Boston films have. Like some of my favorite directors who make Boston movies are Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, The Gone Baby Gone's, The Mystic River, Patriot's Day, it's one of my favorites. This was not, but I did enjoy it now.
So, I am imagining that we'll have listeners who will hear this tomorrow who didn't just watch the film and maybe have never seen the film. So for those listeners, this is the story of state trooper in Massachusetts who goes undercover in a gang led by Jack Nicholson and a police officer who's a bad guy who's undercover for Jack Nicholson inside the Massachusetts State Police. Casey, as I was watching it this time, and I have many thoughts about the film that we just watched, I found myself thinking, okay, so what's possible in this film? And we'll get to the Whitey connections or lack thereof.
No, there are a lot of Whitey connections
in
this story. But is it possible, I think, is the question, right? Everything is possible. I've been covering organized crime here in Boston for 30 years. And what you saw on the screen really happened in many ways. Go back to, does this film stand up after so many years? And, you know, the first thing I think of, God, those flip phones. You know, everybody was using flip phones in the film, and you look at it now and you think that's ancient history, as is the language that, when you hear it, you know, that first scene is very jarring. And I didn't remember it being as jarring in 2006 when I saw it, as opposed to 2023 when we're rewatching it. Now that's kind of a reflection of where the city was back in the, you know, the bad old days. We have come a long way since then, but from an organized crime angle, yes, it's very over the top, but so was the gang war in Boston from the 1960s all the way up to the early 1990s, when you had over 157 men and women killed in a gang war, which was the bloodiest gang war in American history.
So I want to hit a couple of points there. You know, the first is, again, for those who weren't with us tonight and seeing the film, the opening scene is of the riots in 1974 around busing in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, well covered in the book Common Ground, and then actually, interestingly, very well covered over the summer in a play called Common Ground Revisited by Kirsten Greenidge. And it is interesting, Ty, that this film, it's not just the language, and it's not just, and I'm just going to say it, that the only female character who has any dimension sleeps with everyone, right? It's not just
as psychiatrists
things.
Do. Yeah.
But this film is literally...
She literally should have her license revoked, yeah, like 5 minutes into this,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's problematic, right? But this film is literally rooted in racism. This film is rooted, it is framed, it is opened, and it is originated and situated in racism, Ty. And I saw that differently, sitting here as a white woman. I saw that differently than I did when I saw it the first time in 2006, 2007, 2008.
Well, I do think the conversation is, among white Bostonians, is different than it was 15 years ago, 16 years ago. No, how many years ago?
17.
Now. Okay.
The film came out in 2006.
I think the shocking nature of that and the honesty of it, honestly, you know, that first line that, you know, Damon says to Anthony Anderson, you know, you're a black guy in Boston, you don't need my help to be completely
blanked.
That comes from the screenwriter William Monahan, who is a son of Dorchester, and I think had very few illusions about the city and its racial inequalities, and a lot of the people he grew up with. And I remember seeing this movie in 2006 and kind of going, whoa, somebody's telling the truth. It's something that really, we still have trouble acknowledging. And I think, you know, you have one black character in the movie, and you could go in that direction further, but that's not what this movie is about. Although it's there, it's part of the backdrop, it's part of the language. It's actually one of the things I think that makes this film feel real and honest in a scuzzy, nasty way that is truthful. You know, the history of Boston movies, and I've written a lot about the history of Boston movies, is very much not about addressing the racial situation in Boston. I do think the great Boston movie would be about the busing era, and it will never, ever be made, because everybody here is afraid to make it.
So let's touch on filmmaking. Casey, part of the reason that I had said maybe based in Whitey Bulger, maybe not, is because, as one of the audience members shouted out, there was a Hong Kong film called Infernal Affairs,
right,
that is this plot, that came out before The Departed. In fact, Brad Pitt and another Hollywood figure optioned the rights to that film, and it was eventually turned into The Departed. So the core story is actually rooted, right, in a different story, and then a series of choices to bring it to Boston, which bring the Boston pieces in.
Which brings a lot of the Boston pieces in, and you know that this is the mythology of Whitey Bulger that Whitey Bulger wanted the world to see, not necessarily the FBI informant part of that, because for his entire life, despite the facts that we all know, he always insisted he wasn't an FBI informant. But, you know, Frank Costello is based on Whitey Bulger. Billy Monahan utilized a lot of that Boston noir lore of the 1980s, the 1970s, to weave it in and really to make the story The Departed and to separate it from the previous inclination, you know, that was in the Hong Kong genre.
So Dominga, now as a filmmaker, we know those choices are made, right? And you talked about some of not your favorite Scorsese film, a little bit operatic, some great acting. As a filmmaker, what were the choices you noticed tonight that stood out to you the most in the film?
Well, let me bring it back for a second for one of the reasons why I was so disappointed. Because I like the story. I'm fascinated with the historical aspect of the Winter Hill Gang. And I wanted the filmmaker to just get to it. Why not call him Whitey or Bulger? And so I wanted that moment for me as a filmmaker. Now, to answer your question, what's missing in all of these Boston stories is the black perspective, right? This is a very racist city. Former mayor said that racism here is a public health crisis, right? We all
Boston
know...
Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, who's now the Labor Secretary.
Yes. We all know that it's very difficult as black creatives in this city. I can speak from lived experience about that. Very seldom do you have professional writers who work in Hollywood that are from here. You have a few, a handful. But those stories are not, that perspective is not shown. For example, Steve, the rightful man Fleming, grew up in Orchard Park, where I grew up, where New Edition grew up, where Donna Summers' family grew up. But you don't hear those stories in the history in any of those movies. So as a filmmaker, I would say what's missing in all of them is us.
And was there anything that stuck out to you in the film that felt particularly strong or unique? This is this film. This is why it captured the imagination of the people at the time. You know, I don't want to lose in looking at it wide-eyed. Best picture, mm-hmm. Best director. Filled a theater here, right, 17 years after it was released. What did you see any moments of greatness in the film as a filmmaker?
Well, the movie is great. It won Best Picture because of the acting. It's phenomenal acting. Don't you all think that it was amazing acting in this film? Martin Scorsese is a legend, right? So there was nothing particularly wrong about the film. It's just that it was a film that alluded to Whitey Bulger, and I just think that they should not have avoided that. Maybe that was some licensing issues of a reason why.
Well, Whitey Bulger was still on the run,
right?
You know, when this movie actually premiered, and Whitey Bulger did see this film the day that it premiered in 2006 in San Diego, and I wrote about that in my book Hunting Whitey, but. I think you're absolutely right when it's, you know, it's really kind of one viewpoint into the city as opposed to a lot of different viewpoints and angles and perspectives. And I think Scorsese could have added more texture to that story. You know, the few minority characters really kind of stand out because they didn't have much to do besides the female psychiatrist, as you said, Ty, you slept with everybody in the film. But I do think that the performances stand out. I'm a big sucker for Boston gangster films, going all the way back to The Friends of Eddie Coyle and Robert Mitchum, which was a great film.
The first film we did in set in Boston.
Excellent. If you guys haven't seen it, watch it. You know, the dialogue and the accents are really original and clear and very true to this place. But, you know, Departed is, it's rooted in truth, but it's operatic. And I do think, Ty, to your point, it created this stereotype of Boston gangster. When you come to Boston, immediately you hear, stepping up to Boston and all of the different tropes that we now look back on 15, 17 years later as a joke.
Right. Ironically, Scorsese is, we think of him as a New York filmmaker.
Right.
And I think it's funny that some of the best Boston films have been made by New Yorkers. I'm thinking of The Verdict, which was made by Sidney Lumet, who's like, you know, the quintessential New York director. But there are places here where I feel like, oh yeah, this is made by somebody who isn't from here. And there are other places where I feel like, ooh, somebody here Somebody in this production lives here. And
so give an example of each.
Honestly, with Monahan's script, the language, the slurs, the particular slurs, are very much particular to Boston. I remember, you know, hearing stuff like that growing up. The fact that somebody says, oh, it's out on 128. Somebody from out of town would say it's out on Route 95. If you say 128, you're from here. At the same time, there are aspects of the film that could take place anywhere. You know, you take away the accents, you take away the bulger stuff. It's still a pretty standard genre, crisscross kind of movie. Very Baroque, very well constructed. And sometimes I think Scorsese is more interested in dropping in little bits of film history because he loves that. The X's throughout the movie that he's lifted from Scarface. The shower, the shot of the shower head that's right out of Psycho.
Right.
The Madeline walking toward the camera at the end straight out of The Third Man. I think sometimes that's what jazzes him more than the tropes that we're talking about.
Right. So go ahead, Dominga.
To Ty's point, what I'll say as a writer, they did have someone from Boston in the writer's room because nuance, right? The way that we speak. Bostonians say cold cuts. You're a worker.
Yeah.
We love saying you're a worker. Supper. Some of us still say tonic instead of soda. So those are the things that stuck out to me as a Bostonian that they got right.
But I do think that Monahan slips a little bit. You know, again, I think a lot of the actors probably brought a lot of that dialogue into the script. When Monahan's saying down Providence and up Gloucester, I've lived in Boston for 20 years. You know, when I was in college and a young professional, nobody talks that way in Southie. They don't. You know, this is Monahan trying to be, a classic screenwriter and elevating this to literature beyond the, you know, organized crime genre that he was writing in.
So let's talk a little bit about guns and drugs. And I would argue, just in my perception watching it, right, guns were a character in this film.
It's partly the time this it's made. It's partly the film's roots in Hong Kong action films. That's in the DNA.
Affairs.
That's absolutely in the DNA, and you can't take it out. Sometimes I look at this movie and think, oh, it's not about, you know, undercover cops. It's about the perfect headshot. You know, it looks like they really put a lot of thought okay. into how blood sprays.
I was going to say, by headshot, you don't mean actors.
No. I mean somebody getting shot in
the
head.
Shot to the head.
They really choreograph that in a way that I think probably jazzed them from a craft point of view, but sticks out now as, again, I think partially intentionally over the top and operatic. But does it reflect, a larger obsession in this country with guns? Well, yeah, sure. Every movie made by Hollywood pretty much does that. I actually think this is a little more the way the omnipresence of shooting in this movie really comes from Infernal Affairs.
So you really see that as the lineage that we can one
yeah.
of the pieces of lineage.
Yeah. I think it's actually probably the most clear. Lineage from that movie.
Although I will say, because I watched Infernal Affairs last night, right, to get ready for tonight, there are also scenes that are almost frame for frame.
Yes.
The same.
That's right.
As they are in The Departed.
Yeah. And again, I think the Hong Kong action genre, John Woo, Scorsese had a lot of respect for John and certainly brought a lot of his storytelling and, visual operatics into his filmmaking. You know, you look at John Wick and those films today, it's comic book violence. You know, the violence that we saw in The Departed, I can tell you that has really happened. I've seen the crime scene photos. I've been to those crime scenes. I know those types of shootings actually happen. So even though it was over the top, you know, it was rooted in reality.
Does anyone who's not from Boston actually learn anything about Boston from watching this movie?
No.
Not to go to 344 Washington Street.
Casey, do you agree?
Again, I think it's Boston is stereotypical Boston. This is the Boston they think that they know until they get here. But, you know, again, when it came out and all the fanfare that was involved with it, I think any time that you can film a major movie here in Boston with that the host of the cast that they had, you know, that's a positive, even though it does shine a negative light on a particular, you know, chapter in Boston's history of crime. I thought that the film does stand up. I think that people around the country in the world love it. I've been all over the world, and the first, they don't talk about the movies that I've been involved in. They talk about The Departed. Somebody in France gives me their best Boston accent, and I have to laugh, but that's the way they view it.
Last voice there, Casey Sherman, some of our conversation from last night's viewing of The Departed at the Coolidge Corner Theater. Sherman is a local screenwriter and best-selling author of books like The Finest Hours and, along with David Wedge, Hunting Whitey, the inside story of the capture and killing of America's most wanted crime boss. We also heard from Dominga Martin, an award-winning local filmmaker whose work has aired on BET, VH1, MTV Music, and Grammy.com, and film critic Ty Burr, creator of the Substack e-newsletter Ty Burr's Watchlist. And he helped us launch Set in Boston on the show. We appreciate the support from the Coolidge last night and hope to bring you more live film out in the city of Boston.